Well met, and welcome to episode 46, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for May 23rd, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and this week we're going to continue our month-long discussion of Romeo and Juliet with a conclusion of our discussion of reviews of productions available on DVD, and then we'll do our recap of this week's blog entries. Now, with a play as popular as Romeo and Juliet, you know there's a boatload of versions, even more than last month's Midsummer. And if you're a long-time listener, you know that I always like to kick off the DVD discussion with the BBC Complete Works series productions because they tend to be a good touchstone for comparison as they're typically full-text versions done without too much high concept. So that being said, last week we started off with the 1978 BBC production directed by Alvin Rankoff. And as I noted then, it's a very good production. Not great, but a wonderful starting point. Now this week, we'll start off with the classic version, i.e. the one that most folks born between 1960 and 1985 saw in their freshman high school English classes, despite Romeo's bare butt and a flash of Juliet's breast in their final goodbye. That's right, the 1968 Franco Zeffirelli-directed version. It credits Zeffirelli and Franco Brusati and Massalino D'Amico with adapting the screenplay, and we'll touch upon that a little later. The opening is a slow pan of Verona as the chorus in voiceover slowly intones that prologue in sonnet form. Oh, wait a minute. It's not in sonnet form as we only get the first 8 lines. But that's okay. I can deal with that. We move down into the town square and we see that it's a period dress, all tights and cod pieces. Only when they start talking, they've skipped the bawdiness and all the comedy relating to Samson's false bravado. Okay, it looks like Zeffirelli and company have hacked the text down. Be prepared for more of that. If we don't get the body, at least we get the violence, as the opening brawl is an out-and-out battle with people dying. A side note here on costuming, the hat maker should have received a big bonus for Tybalt's hat, because it gave him feline ears, perfect for the Prince of Cats. Anyway, we get to see the difference in ages between Capulet and his wife. And if you haven't been reading the blog, take it from me, it's important and crucial to the subtext, and their marriage appears to be pretty loveless. Capulet doesn't want Paris to marry Juliet at first, saying that those so early married are also damaged, and at that point he sees his wife just at that moment, and it's a nice touch. Olivia Hussey, please, no jokes on the name, is a wonderfully young, beautiful, and only slightly overacting Juliet. Her being nearly 14 is totally believable. Leonard Whiting is a 20-ish Romeo and serviceable enough, with great charm and enthusiasm, if not great acting chops. We get no discussion of Rosaline, no saint seducing gold, no reading of the guest list by Romeo and Benvolio. They simply just decide to crash the party. Now, this felt a little jarring. John McHenry as Mercutio delivers pretty much the best version of the Queen Mab speech I've seen in the DVDs thus far, abridged though it is. It's a wonderful riffing improvisation until he begins to lose his bearings during the soldier section and completely melts down in the hag section. It's a great performance, and we can only guess as to why Mercutio is the way he is. Now, as you can tell, there's been quite a few cuts. I guess Zeffirelli and company thought the cuts were necessary so that they could insert a song into the party scene. That's right, the love theme to Romeo and Juliet. Okay, sure, if you say so. But then we have to lose Mercutio's body conjuring of Romeo. The balcony itself is pretty much intact in all its romantic and passionately stupid and stupidly passionate glory. The two leads really shine in this section. The rest of the film for me sort of drags, even with the massive cuts in the last section. No speech before taking the potion. Were they afraid that Hussey couldn't pull off that speech? No apothecary. For some reason, Romeo and Friar John go past each other on the road, and I think that's so that they could cut the Friar Lawrence Friar John scene, and no Paris confrontation at the tomb. Now, you know how I feel about the symmetry of death in the play. So, to not only lose the death of Paris, but to also see Lady Montague alive and mourning at the end of the play, well, you don't have to imagine what I think of Zeffirelli and company's cuts. Now, there are some things I do like. The playful fight choreography between Mercutio and Tybalt in the first half of their fight, Mercutio's death, a giggly nurse who seems sincerely regretful for her betrayal of Juliet's trust and love for Romeo, but I could have really done without the overuse of the actors staring into the camera to deliver their lines. It was kind of distracting. Now, I liked the first half of the film, or at least I liked it more than I remembered from earlier viewings. But you know how the last taste in your mouth can ruin your enjoyment of a meal? Well, I feel that way about this movie. The heavy-handed cuts at the end really ruined it for me. So let's see. I didn't like Zeffirelli's Taming. I don't like his Romeo. And I remember having issues with his Hamlet. So please, Franco, no more Shakespeare for me. Next up is a British television production directed by Joan Kemp Welch in 1978. Done in period dress and with well-spoken, easily understood dialogue, the 2 hours traffic of the stage turns into 3 hours traffic of TV. Now, it feels much like the BBC Complete Works production in its setting and costuming, and that was done just 2 years later. The opening brawl is wonderful and exciting, sucking the viewer in with a great action sequence between a blonde Benvolio and a red-headed, fiery Tybalt, played by David Robb. Tybalt is such a badass with the sword that he fights Benvolio while eating an apple. Romeo is a very pretty Christopher Neame in his mid-20s, and Anne Hassan plays Juliet as 14, though she looks to be 20-ish. Her attempts early on to appear younger do more to play a kind of mental simpleness rather than youth, but by the balcony scene, we see her as the emotional equal of Romeo. Admittedly, that's a pretty low bar. They are pretty passionate with each other, and this conveys the character's love or lust, but neither actor grabs the audience's attention or heartstrings, though Neame is more successful than Hassan. Patsy Byrne is a nicely bawdy but loving nurse with just enough snarl to her, even in the early scenes, to make her betrayal of Juliet seem fully within character. Clive Swift's Friar Lawrence is great, though he looked so much like a late 70s version of John Cleese that I was a little distracted. The key in this production is Robin Nedwell's Mercutio. Completely understandable, his character is the most verbally demonstrative of the play. But unlike most productions, this Mercutio seems almost manic-depressive, unable to control his words or the thoughts that provoke them. His Queen Mab speech ends on a very bizarre note, as he's beginning to have a migraine from the effort of getting the speech out. It's very strange, but strangely effective. His conjuring of Romeo in Act Two is masterfully bawdy, and his taunting of the nurse, complete with breast fondling, is wickedly funny. But he in the production hits the high point in the fight with Tybalt. That entire centerpiece of the play, from the heat of the street to Tybalt's smiling entrance to the challenge to the deaths, is remarkable. At first, Mercutio seems outmatched, but he rises up to the challenge of the King of Cats. When Mercutio playfully fakes his death midway through the fight, he sets up his friend's disbelief over his mortal injury. It's just brilliant and truly exciting. That death leads to another, shorter, more brutal, very bloody fight between Romeo and Tybalt. And the play isn't the same from that point on. The life, even the dark life of Mercutio is gone, and the play suffers for it. The rest of the play doesn't seem to just have a damper on it. It seems to drag. In fact, the main issue I have with the production is its overly long running time. I know that Kemp Welch was trying to make sure that we understood every word and that we believed that her actors understood every word, but the slow pace in some of the dialogue-heavy scenes, Juliet and the nurse upon Romeo's banishment, Romeo and Lawrence's cell, etc., just drag the whole production down. There were moments where I actually yearned for some of the more ridiculously emotionally overwrought sequences, like Juliet's potion-taking scene, just to juice up the production, especially after Mercutio's death. Oh, and one more thing. The final credits are horrible. They're shots of the actors in character in arched window cutouts. It looks like Monty Python, and not befitting at all the end of a tragedy. I kept waiting for a huge cartoon foot to drop and squash the characters. Now, if you're patient, this is a very good production. It drags, but the language is very understandable. And that centerpiece fight, man, that's good stuff. Now, while it might not be worth a purchase, it is definitely worth a rental. Alrighty then, let's finish off our DVD discussion with the 1996 version directed by Baz Luhrmann with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes in the title roles. While it's William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, says so right in the title, many changes have been made by Craig Pearce and director Luhrmann, who did the screenplay. Now, some of the changes were wonderful, some dubious, and others, well, let's just say that many a Bartophile had issues with this version. The film kicks off with a shot of a television filled with static. Then a news anchor woman appears and delivers the prologue as the camera does a slow zoom in on the television. then the film truly breaks loose with a bold, modernistic style. The prologue is repeated in voiceover, and we're introduced to the main characters, all in a frantic editing style. If the editing is frantic, then the set design is the epitome of contemporary decay, with the place set in a modern Verona Beach, not Italy, but some sun-drenched third-world outpost, one where guns are as rampant as the overt religious statuary on the buildings. And the color palette? Latin American vivid colors, almost to the point of garishness. The opening brawl makes the Montagues out to be the trash-talking hotheads instead of the Capulets, and it is filmed as the offspring of some unholy union between a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, a Sergio Leone spaghetti western, and a John Woo Hong Kong action flick. Unusual camera angles, comic sound effects, stylized music all make for a wild ride of those first 5 minutes. One almost gets the feeling that Lerman uses the opening moments to completely blow out the style so that anyone offended by this being done to the Bard will leave, and he'll be left with those who still want to go on the ride. Nothing for the remainder of the film lives up to those first manic 5 minutes, though the last 10 try and sadly fail. Or maybe they succeed, and maybe that's sad because the lovers deserved a less crazy conclusion. Anyway, here's some of the more interesting changes. The weapons are guns, and the guns have make and model types like longsword, rapier, etc., so they can be used and the dialogue can stay the same. Peter's invite list is replaced by a television gossip monger who previews that night's upcoming social function. Queen Mab becomes the name of an ecstasy-like drug, fueling Mercutio's speech. Friar Lawrence's message being sent post-haste? Well, post-haste now becomes the name of a FedEx-type delivery company, and the friar's conversation about the missing message to Romeo is now a phone conversation with a representative of the company. These changes all pretty much work, or at least they did for me. As for the actors, I thought John Leguizamo was brilliant as a preening but dangerous Tybalt, and more on him in a minute. Claire Danes, I felt, made for a solid Juliet. Both Pete Postlewaithe and Miriam Margolis did exemplary work as a tattooed Friar Lawrence and nurse, respectively. The nurse is played ethnically, calling out for her ward, Juliet! Priceless. Paul Sorvino made for a wonderfully Italian Capulet, with accent, even if he was married to what seemed to be an aging American Southern belle by her accent, go figure. Harold Perrineau, as what seemed to be a latently homosexual Mercutio, and Vondi Curtis Hall as a not very princely Captain Prince, fare less well, as does Paul Rudd in the thankless role of Dave Paris. But even they were shining performances in comparison to Leonardo DiCaprio's Romeo. Early on in his career, remember this is 2 years before Titanic, the poor guy is just in over his head. He cannot modulate his voice for the life of him or his characters, and I rarely thought he knew what he was saying. Now, there are some changes that I thought worked, though I'm sure others will find fault in. It's clear that Lady Capulet and Tybalt are lovers. We see them kissing, and she takes Capulet's line of, so did I, in referring to love for Tybalt. It works for me. Given the proximity of ages of those two in comparison to Lord Capulet himself, I've always thought that this was a valid idea. Also, the potion of the friars is said to last 4 and 20 hours rather than the text's 2 and 40. As I'll discuss next week, this is a masterful change and one with which I wholeheartedly agree. Now, like I said, those changes worked for me, but might not have for others. The ending, however, I'm not sure works for anybody. As Romeo heads back to Verona, he seems to be on the run from the prince's men in helicopters who are trying to assassinate him. They chase him to the church, where he takes a hostage to help him enter the church where Juliet is lying in state. The craziness of this, and the lack of Paris, thus negating the symmetry of death we talked about last week, is in no way redeemed by what I thought was an interesting death scene. Juliet wakes to watch Romeo take the drug. Very emotional, but coming so hard after such a ridiculous buildup, it doesn't feel earned. And the whole ending falls apart. No explanations, the friar never shows up, and the prince announces that all are punished, and the TV anchor delivers the prince's final chorus-like lines, and a movie. So, do I recommend it? Yeah, I do. In fact, until those last crazy 20 minutes, I liked it. A lot. No matter how off the wall the interpretation was. It's a wild ride. Would it be the only version I would show to a classroom? Absolutely not. But would I show it? You bet your assignments I would, if for no other reason than to show how strong the work is. So strong that you can play with it to an incredibly wild extent, and it still carries with it its Shakespearean power. So, let's recap. The 1978 BBC Complete Works? Rent it. The 1936 MGM Leslie Howard Norma Shearer, rent it, maybe. The 1965 Rata television, avoid that one like the plague. The 1968 Franco Zeffirelli, rent it, though buy it if you like your R&J in period and don't mind substantial cuts in the text. The 1976 British television, rent it. And finally, the 1996 Baz Luhrmann, I'd buy it, unless you can't take a modern setting, in which case, just rent it. And all of this week's and last week's versions are available on Netflix and Amazon.com. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this week, you've missed out on subjects including The Age of Leo, Angelica My Arse, The Mercurial One, not really, Oh Then I See, Crush a Cup, and Scansion, Textual Clues for Performance. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news and notes than the daily discussions of our play of the month. Also, if you have any questions or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again for our next podcast. Now, next week, we'll discuss some casts and production concepts, plus talk about what is, in my opinion, the most important concept in the play. And it's not love, or youth, or lust, or passion. And when you hear it, you'll say, well, it's about time. And we hope to see you then. Been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for May 23rd, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.